Welcome to another episode of Comic Syndicate. Check them out at thecomicsyndicate.podbean.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And now, here are your hosts, Josiah Sinat.
Welcome to the Comic Syndicate episode 299. I'm Josiah Sinat for the villain on Twitter, at comic_syndicate on Instagram. What's up, guys? Back one more week, and I'm trying to be as consistent as I can. So, fuck it. Let's start like we normally do, what we spoke about 100 episodes ago. 100 episodes ago, episode 199, and we entitled hashtag... Fuck me. We didn't call it that. My bad. We entitled hashtag... episode 199, hashtag Mr. Magagi. Mr. Magagi. Yes. There's a story behind it. Listen to it, because my co-host at the time was not the best cat at vocalizing things and spelling and a lot of things. But I love Homeboy and I miss Homeboy. At MemDB Internet for the villain, pick up once again. Catch up, shoot, what's going on? Talk, episode 200, work, then roll through. Okay, so let's break it down a little bit. We always catch up, episode 200, the work that goes behind every 100, every 50, 75, every 25 episodes, you know, is a milestone, and every 100 episodes is another fucking milestone. I'm going to go into the milestones right now, but yeah, so we hit the work that goes behind the structure of those particular episodes, because those ones I found myself working a lot harder, but it's cool. We hit what we spoke about 100 episodes ago, which back then was nunchucks, along with what the fuck news. See, Princess Cruise Ship goes into ghost mode, quote unquote, to avoid pirates. That's probably where I got the concept for deep dives and rabbit holes podcast called Oh Ship. And it's... pretty much, yeah, the death rates on cruise ships and what cruise ships can do and do to combat pirates. And as gnarly as that sounds, I fucking did it. Like, I did, like, two shows about it. And maritime laws and rules and shit like that. Just shit that I find interesting that nobody else should know about. If you want to learn about that, also go into those ones. But we'll talk about that in a bit. We hit comic reviews, Image Comics, Redlands number one, DC Comics, this was a really good one, DC Comics, Miracle Man number one, which was written by Tom King. We hit Marvel Comics, Vader number four, and East of West from Image Comics, all books of the week. East of West, I still love the fuck out of it. It's a dope story. The art is amazing by Nick Dragotta, and Jonathan Hickman is the writer, and it's just a dope fucking story. So if you guys have been listening to the show, I haven't dropped reviews in a while, but I'm going to go over some bullet points real quick and catch you guys up on the going-ons in the world and, well, everything, I guess, on my end for the most part. Bullet points. So let's start here. So the initial game plan for both podcasts for the most part, but technically all three of them. So The Comic Syndicate, Deep Dives and Rabbit Holes, and The Audio Chronicles. All three were created in a weird way for each of them to not really reference the other and to just have each of them be their own separate entity. So The Comic Syndicate is pop culture, Deep Dives and Rabbit Holes is a little bit more thought-provoking, and The Audio Chronicles is me just straight up interviewing people, and that's what it is, and having a conversation piece, and that's what I like. I just love doing that with people and strangers, and like, what's your fucking story? I always love, there's always a story behind people, and everyone has a story, whether it be good or bad. So I don't like getting interviewed particularly, although I've been interviewed a bunch of times, and if you guys want, I can give you links to other podcasts invited me on just to interview me, and I don't like talking about myself, so to open up in that way, but like, I just like pulling information out of people and like leading them down a road and like, all right, well, tell me your story, and then lead them, and open-ended questions where it's just conversational views. Again, that being said, the initial game plan for each of those was to each be a separate entity from each other and not reference either for the most part. And it's going to sound weird, but I just find it harder and harder to pull those off, especially with the work behind that, that goes behind a deep dives and rabbit holes episode is a lot of fucking work. So if I had more time in my life, in my world right now, they would still be completely separate entities. And this is going to make sense with some bullet holes. So with all that being said, I'm really quickly going to piggyback episode 298.1, Mad Season. So for starters, trust me, let's talk about it real quick. I'm going to reference it. Anyone that has asked, I left a lot out. Like, there is no way behind it, and there is rhyme and there is reason behind the thought process. But I left a lot out, which goes from the interviews across the board with the bands to fan reactions and to offshoot rabbit holes that led me down different paths of things I didn't know and just things that I was learning about that I hadn't necessarily known about the band before. So it's work to put into it. The fact that I knew so much about them and this particular band helped out a lot. So it was weird and it was random. The feedback off of that one, thank you guys. Like, I don't think anyone has said anything bad. I got a lot of people that were stoked about it on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. Like, it weird, but holy shit, it was dope, guys. So thank you. I didn't think I could pull something like that off. And I know I have enough faith and confidence in myself. I can pull off anything. That one was interesting and no bad negative feedback at all. And I'm the type of guy where I appreciate even bad feedback. I've gotten hate mail before. I haven't got hate mail in a long time. So the fact that you guys dug and enjoyed episode 298.1 Mad Season, thank you. Like, I pulled it off, so thank you, and that it was informative, and that you guys enjoyed it. Again, I just want to thank you guys for appreciating the work I put into that one. Okay, still bullet points. I had at least 30 to 45 minutes of material left that I could have gone through and spoke about, at least, for that particular episode. I just thought it was better that I axed that information. And I do know it sounds weird, but I looked at certain articles and I wanted things to be as much concise and as much in succession as I could with the theme of the story and the band. And I know I stumbled over a few dates perhaps, and there were a few things I have to edit the podcast, and I hate the sound of my voice, and I that's everyone for the most part, but to go through it, I caught a few things where I'm like, oh, okay, it wasn't that album, it was that album. Like, and for the Metallica stuff, like small things that I caught, and I don't ever listen to myself after it's out in the ether when it's out into the world, but just knowing like, oh, I know what I did wrong. And I don't know, you guys are slapping yourselves in the head sometimes like, oh no, Josiah's, which is fine. Like, that it's a lot of plates to always juggle with the editing and recording and doing everything, and this whole process is a work, and so you just bear with me on that much. And again, you guys didn't complain about anything, which was dope. But I did not talk about the Alice in Chains Mopop concert ceremony that happened earlier this year, and it's the Seattle Museum of Pop Culture inducted Alice in Chains into their museum, where a bunch of bands, singers, artists covered a bunch of Alice in Chains songs. Like, Metallica covered Wood, Corey Taylor, Dave Navarro, Ann Wilson, Nancy Wilson of Heart, Korn, Smashing Pumpkins, Mastodon, Kim Thayil from Soundgarden, even Chris Cornell's daughter, Lily Cornell Silver, sang Black Gives Way to Blue in one of the songs I did mention. And I know Lupe, thank you. I still have an hour to go on that. I try to catch a song here and there, but there are a lot of beautiful songs. And it reminds me of a lot of things in the way these bands and artists, their renditions, they made it their own to cover these Alice in Chains songs. It is beautiful. So if you guys are interested, just go to the MoPop site, and it's their homepage. You can find it, or just YouTube MoPop, the Alice in Chains. It's dope. And I still have an hour to go through on that one. I didn't mention that at all. And I didn't mention several things in particular that I did have jotted down in my show notes that I just didn't hit. Because, again, to do the work, to press all the buttons, to talk, to jump from page to page, and to try to be concise is really hard to do when you don't have a producer, when you don't have an editor, when you don't have a co-host. I'm literally juggling everything. It's hard work. It's a lot of work for one person. I'm going to be honest about that. But these are the last few things that I really wanted to touch base back on, because these ones are small, interesting facts that I really enjoyed. So I did touch briefly on probably the first one I'm going to go through, which these are the last three things I'm going to piggyback off of last week's deep dives and rabbit holes, episode 298.1 Mad Season. This is off of a Guitar World magazine article, and this is an interview with Jerry Cantrell, lead guitarist of Alice in Chains. Speaking of Lane, what do you think of Above, the Mad Season album? These articles are fucking dope. And again, I had to ask so much. I could have gone for forever, like each show I can, but we'll go through that right now. His answer: I think it's fucking great. I totally have to fess up. I was jealous as shit when I first heard it. It's like somebody taking your girlfriend out, laughs. But after that initial reaction, I went and saw them play at the Moore Theater, and I was so proud. I was beaming for them. I almost started crying when I was watching them because it was so cool. Then I felt pissed again, because I wasn't up there playing, laughs. I talked to Lane a lot about the record. It was good for him because it blew a bunch of shit out of his head. I've been credited for being a writer and putting out a lot of material with this band and stuff, so I think it was really healthy for him to be able to do that. I have nothing but the greatest respect for the guy. And the record's very soulful. There are some real low, cobwebby passages on that fucker that are cool as fuck. Lane has the most beautiful way of saying something horrible I've ever heard. So things like that. And another thing is, I'm going to go through that one last, because this is just dope. The cover of Mad Season, the album, that art is Lane Staley's art. The interior art of the lyrics is Lane Staley's art. So just small facts like, oh shit, that was Lane Staley. So he had he created the cover. It's a man looking at a woman, and she looks almost angry at the dude, and the dude looks sad, almost, and pissed at the same time. And we've all felt like that. Anyway, so that's a small fact I wanted to toss in. And the last one is, I've put this quote up, I think on Facebook a while ago. Well, actually a long time ago by now. And on Instagram, I don't think I've really put it up, maybe one time, but it was a long time ago too. I do remember this article. And this is an article now with Lane Staley. Just small facts, but the way he articulates this, I love the fuck out of it. And hopefully it resonates with you guys a little bit. Even if you guys hate this band or I don't relate to this. And this is the interview he had. And this is his exact quote. "People have a right to ask questions and dig deep when you're hurting people and things around you," Staley continues. "But when I haven't talked to anybody in years, and every article I see is dope this, junkie that, whiskey this, that ain't my title. Like, hi, I'm Lane Nailbiter, you know?" And this is beautiful. One of my favorite quotes from him. My bad habits aren't my title. My strengths and my talent are my title. So just small things like that. I did ask a lot. I left a lot out, and for good reason. And still on bullet points, I can legit go long every show if I wanted to. Like, I have the bandwidth, I have the memory to record 3 hours plus 5 hours plus each show if I wanted to. And I could, on top of that, put out a podcast each day for 3 to 5 hours if I wanted to. And more importantly, if I could, because if I had the time. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Also, one of the things it does come down to is I wouldn't want to bore you guys like that anyways. You guys hear me for 45 minutes to an hour each week. And I think that's more than enough, Josiah's, than you guys deserve, I feel like I'm beating you guys up, which, you know, it does happen. But I got to keep them short. And you know what? No one really commutes to work anymore, it seems like. But if I can get you guys lost for, again, 45 minutes to an hour, I'm doing a good job. And yeah, I like getting you guys lost. And fuck it, jump on this carpet ride with me. Let me steer it. And yeah, so just don't have the time. And again, I think the best way to keep the podcast is weekly. And flip-flop the deep dives and audio chronicles, which I am working on interviews again. So it's work, and it's always work, and it's work begets more work sometimes. Okay, so that's it for bullet points, guys. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that one. Please drop a review for the Comic Syndicate on any podcast app you listen to: Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Castbox, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere you guys do listen to podcasts. I have the stuff for the episode 300 giveaway. I would have loved to introduce or give the winner for the contest, winners of the podcast giveaway. It's raining. The storm has fucking hit, guys. So if it sounds wet, it sounds wet and moist. That's what it is. It's outside. I'm going to run the contest from episode 300 whenever I record that, possibly next week. I have one more deep dives and rabbit holes to go through, so possibly that as well. But I'll give you details, drop lines, hit me up, and give me a few. I'll be right back with some comic talk.
2, 1.
What's up, guys? This is Shola Maridueña, Miguel Diaz from Cobra Kai. This is Jacob Bertrand. I play Hawk, and you're listening to the Comic Syndicate. Woo!
All right, guys, I'm back with some comic talk. Let's hit it real quick. I'm going to try to keep this as short and sweet as possible. Netflix will release a new movie each week of 2021. While 2020 was a big year for Netflix, the streaming giant is stepping things up in 2021 by releasing a new film every single week. I'm a huge movie fan still. Huge movie fan just in general. I don't have time to fucking watch a movie a day. Like, I just don't have the time. So if you guys have the time to binge, do it. They are putting out good, dope shows, so I'm kind of curious about it. From Dusk Till Dawn animated series is being developed by Robert Rodriguez. Robert Rodriguez revealed he's working on an animated TV series based on his cult classic 1996 vampire action horror movie From Dusk Till Dawn that he had helped with Yeah, that dude. Quentin Tarantino. Sorry, guys. We have more. Sony delays Uncharted Ghostbusters Afterlife. Sony has delayed the release of multiple films, including Uncharted Ghostbusters Afterlife and its live-action Cinderella movie. I don't think I've heard about the Cinderella movie necessarily yet. Multiple upcoming films from Sony Product Pictures, have been hit with delays, including Uncharted Ghostbusters, blah, 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 blah. Per Variety, Cinderella, which stars singer-songwriter Camila Cabello as the eponymous princess, has lost its release date of February 5th and will now release on July 16th. All right, so the world we're living in still, hopefully it gets better, guys. I mean, look, fuck it, I'm locked up working my ass off. Still able to record finally, kind of like a zombie, but at least I'm at it. I miss movie theaters. I miss watching a movie in theaters and that fan reaction, and just I miss it. But I mean, just fucking stream them for us, motherfuckers. You just want to make all your money back. But it's cool. That's the way I feel about it. And we can have a conversation. That should probably be the next deep dive. Next one's going to be DC News. Harry Lennox confirms he's Martian Manhunter in the Snyder Cut. Harry Lennox is Martian Manhunter. As Lennox explains, he had no idea about his character's secret identity when he was cast in Man of Steel as General Swanwick, believing it to be a quote-unquote one-and-done situation initially. And when he was brought back for Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, he was still given no clues about the character's real identity. Martian Manhunter is a great character. He's dope. He's powerful. Look, the Snyder, I don't know how to feel about that, guys. But yeah, this next DC news I'm really stoked for, and I really am jazzed. Report: Batman the Animated Series sequel in development for HBO Max. A new rumor suggests that HBO Max is developing a follow-up to Batman the Animated Series. Paul Dini was the writer of a bunch of those ones. Kevin Conroy is the voice of Batman, and they were put together so good. They were dark. They were put on black paper, and the way they were drawn just gave it this backdrop of darkness that it lended to that story and that world so much. So yeah, if you guys grew up, if you guys are my age and you guys can appreciate the artwork, it's pretty dope. Next one's going to be some Marvel news. Deadpool 3 will be an R-rated MCU film, says Kevin Feige. The third film in Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool film franchise will be an R-rated Marvel Cinematic Universe film, according to Marvel Studios' Kevin Feige. It will be rated R, and we are working on a script right now, and Ryan's overseeing a script right now. It will not be filming this year, Feige told Collider. Ryan is a very busy, very successful actor. We've got a number of things we've already announced that we now have to make. But it's exciting for it to have begun. Again, a very different type of character in the MCU. And Ryan is a force of nature, which is just awesome to see him bring that character to life. I grew up a Deadpool fan. And the creator of Deadpool, if you guys are longtime listeners, you guys should know how I feel about dude. They changed Deadpool so much from the 90s to now, and the only person that has the voice for Deadpool, like kind of asshole-ish and funny and witty, Ryan fucking Reynolds. Like, that's the Deadpool. Like, that's the type of guy I am. I'm not Ryan Reynolds. The Deadpool smart-ass fucking motherfucker. Breaking the third wall wasn't necessarily a thing, but anyways, and the chimichangas wasn't necessarily a thing, but I love Ryan Reynolds because he is a comic book fan, and the fact that he knows the history and he knows that voice so well, and it's going to get put in with the Marvel Cinematic finally, fuck yeah, very cool. Next one's going to be She-Hulk. Marvel's Kevin Feige confirms how long the Disney Plus series is. Marvel Studios' head, Kevin Feige, confirmed how long She-Hulk will run and how many episodes the first season will be. Kevin Feige recently delved into the runtime for She-Hulk and other Disney Plus MCU shows, teasing the episode count of the series. Feige spoke to IGN about the upcoming series, how long it will run, and how many episodes it will be. Okay, it was announced that She-Hulk will be a half-hour comedy set in the legal world starring the orphan black lead Tatiana Maslany. As such, it will follow a number of comic book story arcs featuring Jennifer Walters continuing her work as a lawyer while spending all of her time in Hulk mode. Now the head of Marvel Studios has gone into more detail on the length of the first and potentially only season of the show. It's about 6 hours of content, said Feige. Sometimes that'll be 6 episodes. Sometimes that'll be 9 episodes, in the case of WandaVision. Sometimes that'll be 10 episodes. You basically have 10 half-hour episodes, which is what She-Hulk will be. It all varies based on the story that we're telling, and only based on the story that we are telling, Feige continued. A lot for the reasons of that. Other things are the rules of you need this many commercial breaks. You need this many episodes in a season. You need this many episodes to be able to resell it in syndication. There are lots of non-creative reasons for the way a story would be told. Now there are ways to make all of that work. None of that was a factor when it comes to streaming on Disney Plus. So we just got to say, just basically, here's what we're thinking of. This is what we would like to do. So, interesting. Next one's going to be... Oh, this one's interesting. This one's fucking dope. I love this actor as well. Marvel's Moon Knight cast Ethan Hawke as its villain. Oscar Isaac will reportedly be joined by Ethan Hawke in the cast of Marvel's Moon Knight, portraying the main villain in Disney Plus MCU series. I love fucking Moon Knight. Let's see what else we got. Going through, guys. Give me one moment. Let's see what we got. This one, oh, interesting. Let's keep it MCU still. This one is very cool. Guardians of the Galaxy's Karen Gillan confirms Thor Love and Thunder appearance. Karen Gillan recently confirmed that she would be joining the growing cast of Thor Love and Thunder, reprising her role as Nebula. This is also another one that was announced on Thor Love and Thunder. Report. Matt Damon heads to Australia for Thor, Love and Thunder. Matt Damon's travel log fueled rumors that he'll have a cameo in Marvel's Thor, Love and Thunder after recently arriving in Sydney, Australia. All right, what else we got? Morbius delayed again. I think I mentioned that in the Sony news. Sony's upcoming Marvel film Morbius has been delayed for the second time this month and is now set to arrive in theaters this time next year. So, 2022. And last one is going to be a bit of comics news, and it's kind of interesting and it's kind of cool. So if you guys are a fan of the fans of the band, well, of the band Sublime, this is interesting. This is comic news, believe it or not, and kind of cool. I'm intrigued by this one for sure. Sublime and Z2 Comics team up for new OGN. Z2 Comics has announced Sublime $5 at the Door, a new graphic novel about the life and times of Long Beach's reggae, ska, punk band, Sublime. I'm from Orange County, guys. Born and raised in Santa Ana, and I'm an Orange County fucking boy. So HB is Long Beach. Everything's down the fucking road from us. It's not too far. So just some news that is really cool. An anthology described as Xanadu meets Superbad. Sublime, $5 at the Door, is slated to arrive this June and is currently available for pre-order. The 120-page graphic novel comes from the writer Ryan Cady, who wrote Future State Green Lantern, alongside such artists as Audrey Mark, who was the artist for Josie and the Pussycats, Alex Ditto, who did Youth, and Hayden Sherman, who did Angel and Spike, Logan Farber, who did Namwolf, Bill Masuk and Robert Ahmed, amongst others. It will also feature covers by longtime Sublime artist Opie Ortiz and DJ Prodigy. And here's a quote. The laid-back Long Beach trio spawned an entire genre, fusing reggae grooves, punk grittiness, ska energy, back porch folk, introspection, and hip-hop swagger. Z2 said of Sublime in its official release. He still goes on, those disparate sounds first collided back in 1988 when the gregarious Bradley Knoll paired up with the sturdy, simpatico rhythm section bassist Eric Wilson and the drummer Bad Goff, and quickly amassed a cult following in a SoCal scene. Sublime found their niche at house parties, uniting Rastas, surfers, skaters, frat boys, cholos, and ink-covered outcasts with the free-flowing melting pot approach. That, much like the ink-covered outcasts with the free-flowing melting pot approach. Approach that, much like the region itself, was impossible to pigeonhole. That's fucking dope. That's fucking Orange County. That's Orange County in a fucking nutshell, guys. Yeah, it's dope. I love being from Orange County. I'm glad I grew up out here. We knew the band's iconic music always had the added elements behind it of their history of hijinks, anti-authority attitude, and follow-up no-rules lifestyle. And this combination would make for an amazing comic book that fans would cherish, said Sublime manager Scott Sein. So Z2 Comics collaboration was a no-brainer. Additionally, writer Katie spoke to his history with the band's music. And this is his quote. When you grew up in SoCal like I did, Sublime's music is the powerful background radiation permeating this culture, he said. You hear it everywhere. Hopi's sun is everywhere. Stickers of it slapped on taco stand walls. Sharpie tagged inside of every high school bathroom. Screen printed at every possible iteration. I saw these guys like neighbors, and as I researched the human moments underneath the phenomenon with Bud and Eric, I got to share that feeling with everyone who picks up the book. The gritty California sounds of Sublime transcended location and musical genres to foster a state of mind in listeners from coast to coast and beyond, added publisher Josh Frankel. Continues on, our book will highlight Sublime's vast musical influences and behind-the-scenes stories, all centered around the unbreakable bonds of friendship, and continuing in the tradition of essential graphic biopics we established with our Grateful Dead and Charlie Parker releases last year. Multiple different editions of Sublime, $5 at the door, can be pre-ordered. First off, is the standard edition soft cover, which retails for $24.99. There is also the standard edition hardcover. I'm a hardcover guy, which retails for $39.99. Meanwhile, the $99.99 deluxe edition includes a hardcover copy of the book, plus a slipcase, a quote-unquote doing time vinyl LP, and three exclusive art prints. Finally, the $199.99 super deluxe edition includes all of that and adds an exclusive new Lou Dog art sleeve for the LP. So, Bradley Knowles Dog. All right, I believe that's it for comic news. Fuck it. I'm going to hit last one, I guess. Venom number 200 marks the end of Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman's run. I have to talk about this because I'm a huge fan of Donny Cates, and I love his writing style. Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman will conclude their Venom run with a special, and I love fucking Eddie Brock and Venom, anniversary issue in April's Venom number 200, spinning out of King in Black. Writer Donny Cates and artist Ryan Stegman will end their run on Marvel's Venom with a special anniversary issue in number 200. Here's the quote. It's something that we've been building to and building to and building to. Now we're here, Cates told IGN. Ryan and I talked about that a lot, about how Ryan will send in a new page for King in Black. And it's finally like a drawing of something that we've all been thinking about, a particular moment or a scene that we've all been thinking about for almost 4 years now. So it's pretty surreal. It's crazy. It really is a testament to how awesome the Marvel fan base has been and the Venom fans in general, that they've supported the book so much, that this crazy idea of Null, of this Null thing, has stuck around so long, and that we're actually getting to do this. Stegman also chimed in on how his artwork has evolved from his early days of Amazing Spider-Man to more recent works like Uncanny Avengers, Wolverine, and Absolute Carnage. So on top of Donny Cates' writing and writing style, Ryan Stegman's art has fucking gotten so much fucking better throughout the years, and this is his quote. I feel like I'm always pushing. That's just my motto in life and in comics, Stegman said. So I think there was definitely a lack of satisfaction with what I was doing. I thought that some of the stuff I was doing was cool, but I feel like once I got onto Venom, I started to really hone in on what I did well. It was one of those first projects where I was like, oh, I know exactly how to do this, and it just suits my style, which at the time, my style was nebulous, but I felt like I started drawing in a way from issue one of Venom that now I feel like in King of Black, it's the ultimate form of that thing. If we have the cover to Venom 200, I feel like right now that would be the quintessential piece that exhibits my style has become. I'm going to keep pushing for sure, but I feel like I've really found something. It's a little bit annoying that we're getting here to end King of Black. While fans may be disappointed to see Cates and Stegman step away from Venom, the writer compared it to Jason Aaron's fan favorite run on Thor, which Cates is now writing. And Cates says, our Venom run is one big long arc, Cates added. It's just lined up that Venom 200 was the completion of that story. It's a story much in the same way that Jason Aaron was on Thor for so long, and then he told the story. He told his Thor epic, and then it was time for some idiot to come on and try to do his best. I don't want people to think that we were upset or that we're sad or anything. We're really proud of this run. We just think this is it. This is a story, and we're really, really proud of that story, and proud to see it continue. Let someone else have their chance to tell the story. This isn't a funeral. This is a celebration. Brand and I are cooking some stuff up that we think people are really going to enjoy. While our run on Venom is coming to a close, there will be more Ryan and Donnie things for sure, which is dope. So to hear their story and how they became friends, and I mean, they talk to each other all the time, which is dope. All right, guys, I haven't done this one in a long time, so I'm going to still keep it short and sweet. I haven't read anything in a long time. Went to the Orange Circle about 3 weeks ago. And the shop at the Orange Circle, there's a comic book store, and that store is owned by John Domayan. And if that name sounds familiar, he's the drummer of System of a Down. He owns, I believe it's called Adam Comics. Fuck, I should know that. but anyways, he's a huge comic book fan, and he owns that one. There's another shop in Vegas, Las Vegas, I believe. And I walked in. I haven't been to a comic book store, I mean, fuck, since COVID. I mean, so I haven't been in there in any store really for the longest time and bought anything comic form in the longest time. I just don't have the time to read. So finally jumped in there. And first thing I asked, I'm like, I know this is going to sound like a stupid question. Talking to the comic book shop girl. I'm like, do you guys by chance have the first print copies of King in Black number one and number two? And she just gave me that look. I'm like, yeah, I know. I thought I'd try. She's like, do you want to sign up for our mailing list at least? I'm like, I work too much. Like, I would love to. She's like, yeah, we can mail. I'm like, no, I know this pew and I know everything. It's like, having the comics to read is not the problem. The problem is having the time to read and to review and to go through anything like that. So while I was in the shop in issue number 3 of King in Black, which I should have picked up anyways just to have it in my collection for the most part, I didn't. And I haven't read number 1 and number 2, and issue 3 had dropped, again, 2 weeks ago. I'm recording this on Sunday, 1/24/21. And I'm like, well, fuck me. Well, what do I want to get? And I totally forgot. The dude I just spoke about, Donnie Cates. I'm like, shit, I forgot he came out with a new comic for Image Comics. So anyone that's new to these shows, let me tell you a fucking brief story. And I'm going to review a Donnie Cates title right now. So Marvel Comics, the big three, the big two, obviously, are going to be Marvel Comics and DC Comics. The big three is you can lump in Image Comics in there. Image Comics is a complete separate brand. It's creator owned work, which if I ever worked for a company, if I ever was ballsy enough to finally start writing as a comic book writer, as vicious as I am with my writing, it would be for Image Comics, because not only would I get to own the characters I create, but I can get a little ballsy and gnarly and drop a few F-bombs here and there and have it be a little bit more grounded, not superhero-ish. But, yeah, anyways, so Donnie Cates wrote a title, and I'm going to review right now. The name of the title from Image Comics is going to be Crossover. Donnie Cates is the writer. Jeff Shaw is the artist. D. Cunifee is the colorist. John J. Hill it does the letters and design, and this one was interesting for me because I didn't realize this. Another great writer I love is Mark Wade, does the story edits. This one was interesting. I'm going to review number one. I was going to review number one and number two, but I haven't done this in such a long fucking time. And this is probably a deep dive, so I'm going to go into. And the first, as soon as you open the fucking comic, it's cool because if you know, you know, and if you don't know, you don't know, and that's cool. The first insert is a quote. The world of the comic book is the world of the strong and the ruthless, the bluffer, the shrewd deceiver, the torturer, and the thief. In comic books, life is worth nothing. There is no dignity of a human being. Signed, Frederick Wortman, who wrote The Seduction of the Innocent. And that's something I'm going to have to deep dive eventually, because that's a good, interesting story that deals with comics and the ideal. It's a great story. Anyways, we'll say that for another show. The next insert quote is, "Kids love Chance," signed Todd McFarlane. Just love it. This one's cool. So the way the story starts, let me ask you a question and pay attention. This will be on the final. Who is more real, us or Superman? You want to say it's us, right? Of course you do. And sure, I get it. You're real. You walk around. You have friends. You affect change. But really, think about it. You, me, all of us. You'll do all of that. You'll live and love and grow. And then, well, let's face it, relatively soon, you will all die. And even this most successful of you, the most successful of you, will have never made as much of an impact on this world as the, quote unquote, fictional character of Superman. So again, how is he less real than you? He has his friends. He has a life. He has lived and died well before you were born. And he will be here after you've gone. His existence affects change. And someday, well, after you and I are gone, the human race will leave this world. And then, and when we do, we're going to bring Superman with us. You see, he is permanent, and we are not. Stories, myths, legends, they are not fiction. They're a virus, and they are spreading. So as Donny Cates is writing this, Jeff Shaw is going through panels of a young girl, for the most part, reading a fucking comic. And it's interesting panel play with the script, for the most part. And how, as she's reading this, we see the world, we see the news, we see destruction and chaos going on. And it's a part of Colorado, Denver, Colorado, there you go. And the city is getting torn apart. And for some reason, the news reports are like, we have a bunch of, and it's supposed to be grounded. That's what's interesting about the title so far, is this city is getting beat up, destroyed for the most part, because superheroes are fighting each other. And the newscasters are like, we see people with webs. We see people with batarangs. We see people with hammers. Like, we see people with chains. Like, there's a superhero and super villain battle going on. We don't know what the fuck is going on, but they're destroying. So the world of the comic book kind of delves into or gets pulled into somehow into this world, which is interesting. And Jeff Shaw's writing is very cool. So just to see the destruction of what's going on is interesting. So I'm going to try to continue, and I'm not going to go into too much because it's interesting, and it's issue number one, and just a lot of good wordplay and dialogue. So I'm going to jump around a little bit, and without giving, again, I'm going to give you guys context. But on January 11th, 2017, the skies above Colorado opened up, and what could only be described as a superhero summer event exploded into our very real world. According to reports and ground footage, almost every quote-unquote fictional comic book character you have ever heard of has been sighted amidst the chaos. And again, the way Jeff Shaw draws these panels is dope. So we see again all this destruction, and the dialogue goes, it's been years now, and we still don't have an accurate death toll, mostly because it's still happening. A few months into the crossover, one of the supers had the bright idea to put a force field around the whole of Colorado. And as far as anyone knows, they're still in there, fighting and killing and destroying the world in the name of truth, justice, and whatever. So that's the story. We see some girl now that gets introduced. Her name is Ellipsis Howe. They call her Ellie or Elle, like, throughout the whole time. She works at a comic book store. And if you – now you – in this world, you get looked down upon if you talk about comics or the comic book world. And you're kind of ostracized because – your blasphemous fucking books brought this fucking chaos and the devil upon us. Like, these are the reactions of the people in the world, in this world, which is interesting. So to get this Ellie character and she works for a comic book store, and we still see the comic book store full of life. Like, we still see people in there, and you know, I miss the comic book store. Like, it sounds cheesy to say, but I miss reading a book, a physical book, and smelling the pages. I miss opening up a newspaper and smelling the newspaper. Like it's a weird thing, and it's not a weird thing if you're into reading, especially physical. Like, there's a scent behind it, and when you read a newspaper, that the ink when it gets on your fucking fingers is beautiful to me, and it's a dying breed. So, anyways, they're in this comic book store. We get introduced to the owner of the store, and we see a little girl. He looks at the owner. His name is Otto. Sees a little girl on the camera, like, that little fucking hooker bitch is stealing something. He didn't say that at all. But he's like, she's stealing something. They go and find her, and when they turn her around, this girl that just stole this comic book has those. And speaking of the newspaper, I should know what it's called off the top of my head. And this would be another good deep dives and rabbit holes one, is if you guys ever paid attention, and I'm that nerd even prior to knowing this, a newspaper, the comics section. And I don't know, it sounds corny, but like, not just the mini pages in the Orange County Register if you grew up in Orange County, but like comics, the comics section, especially the colored section. If you pay attention to the colors, there are a bunch of dots. They're not completely covered panels or pages. If there is a color on someone's hair, if you look close at it, they're just dots really close together. And I'm a nerd, so I know that shit. So her face has those old school newspaper dots, and her face is red with these dots. And she's freaked out. Everyone's freaked out because everyone's looking at her like, what the fuck is this? And the dialogue is just great. And for Elle to kind of look at this little girl like, we need to help her. Like, people are afraid of things they don't know or understand. And it's just a great way to tell a story. Anyways, there's some dude with his dad that show up to this comic book store. And the dad is a preacher man for the most part, but a very hateful and spiteful fucking preacher man. He shows up with his son, and his son is called Ryan Lowell, and he makes his son, because he apparently found his son with a comic book, and he's like, "No, Dad, I found it. I didn't read it. I'm not a blasphemous, sinning person, Dad." And he's like, "Nope. You're going to do this right now," and literally like Molotov cocktail into the comic book store. And that's interesting, because they asked the girl, like, are you okay? Where did you come from? So this is back and forth, like I said. Otto and Elle asked the girl, and the little girl's name is Ava. And we learned that in issue number 2, which I will review, not tonight. But she's like, a man got me out of the bubble. And he brought me here. They're like, well, she's like, I can draw him for you. They're like, yeah, fuck it. Here's some crayons, dude. Rock out. What is it? So and then that's when we see the son of the preacher man, vindictive motherfucker, try to destroy and hurt and harm these fucking people that are doing what they love fucking doing, and just fucking read and write and let them enjoy what they fucking enjoy doing. So it's just very interesting. So while that happens, and once Ava shows Elle and Otto the picture, and without being like copy infringement, it's like a block figure with a dude. The best way I can describe it without showing you guys. I mean, I'm going to describe it. It's a block figure with a man with two giant eyeballs, with a smile on his face, with about 10 hair strands, with his arms on his stomach almost. And it looks like he has shorts on, with an S on his shirt. And it's adorable, because it's like, yeah, that's how a kid would probably draw someone we think we know. So that's issue number 1. I dug on it. I have not read anything in, 8 months. And that sounds terrible to say, even the news and everything. But I thought it was cool enough to go through and review. It's called The Comic Syndicate. For a reason, I'm able to do these cool things and interview people and meet people for a reason. And that's where it comes from. So, yeah, hope you guys enjoyed that review. If you guys are curious, pick it up. It's, I didn't want to ruin anything, but like, that's worth checking out. It's on issue number 3, number 4 is going to come out soon. So, all right, guys, thanks for listening. You guys are rad, dope, awesome. Episode number 300 is coming up soon. I will catch you guys next week with more details. Yeah, share, subscribe the podcast. Rate us, but more than anything, just subscribe wherever the fuck you guys can subscribe. All right. I'll catch you guys next week. Peace out.